What's that?
What are you talking about?
Oh, spectrophotometers. All right, so we're going to talk about electrophoresis today before we do the laboratory component, which is after I'm done talking, we'll do the quantitation experiment. Actually, we're only going to do part of it. Part one of that quantitation experiment is DNA quantitation using gel electrophoresis. And Alan and I determined that it's silly to do that, actually, for various reasons. So we're not going to do that part, but you still are going to learn about gel electrophoresis, even though we're not doing it today. Not only because it's a useful technique, but we will actually be doing gel electrophoresis later. I think twice even. So there's no reason to have you do it three different times, especially when the first time is kind of stupid as written up in the manual. Okay? But gel electrophoresis, I've just very briefly talked about back in the first week. It's a technique for what? What kind of general technique is it?
For separating substances by their electrical charge.
Right. So even more generally, electrophoresis is a separation technique. Like what other techniques that we've talked about? Centrifugation is separation technique. And what else? That we talked about in here. Vortexing is the opposite. It mixes things. How do you make booze? Distillation is also separation technique. But these different techniques of separation separate things on different bases. So the basis on which electrophoresis separates things is, as you said, it's based on their charge and their size. So the electro part of the word gives away the fact that electrophoresis requires electricity. Well, when we use electricity, when we talk about volts, a voltage is really a separation of charges, electrical charges. So one electrode will be positive and one electrode will be negatively charged. Electrophoresis separates things if they have a charge. If you have a mixture of materials, different types of particles, and none of them has any charge at all, they're all neutral, then electrophoresis will not work to separate those things. Because a neutral particle has no tendency to move toward either the negative electrode or the positive electrode. And therefore, you'd have to use some other kind of technique. But if you have charged particles, or even if you have just some charged particles and some neutral particles, then you can separate them using electrophoresis, because if a particle is charged, it will be attracted to an electrode that has the opposite charge. If you have positively charged materials, they will move through the electrophoresis gel toward the negative electrode. If you have negatively charged particles, they'll move through the gel toward the positive electrode. Okay? So, there's different kinds of electrophoresis, actually. Gel electrophoresis is just one kind of electrophoresis, but that's what we're going to be using in here, and so that's all I'm going to talk about. Gel electrophoresis, though, uses gel as the medium. So you make a little block of gel, and that is the stuff through which these particles migrate if they're charged. If they're not charged, they'll just stay wherever you put them in the gel. But that's why I was saying if you had a mixture made up of some positive, some negative, and some uncharged particles, you could still separate them, because the uncharged particles will stay in the middle wherever you put them in the gel. The positive ones will go toward the negative electrode. The negative ones will go toward the positive electrode, and they'll all separate from each other. Usually, though, gel electrophoresis is used only when the scientist knows beforehand what kind of particles he's dealing with. And what we're going to be using electrophoresis for is DNA. Electrophoresis is primarily used either for DNA separation or for protein separation. We're going to be using it for DNA separation, though. And DNA separation is ideally suited to electrophoresis because DNA, no matter what it comes from, has a negative charge to it. DNA is negatively charged because of how it's made. Do you remember what the components of DNA are? What are the little building blocks of DNA?
Nucleotides.
But if you take just one nucleotide, it itself has three parts to it, remember? Remember what those three parts are?
Phosphate.
A phosphate group, which is a phosphorus atom and four oxygen atoms. What else? A pentose sugar, which in the case of DNA, that sugar is always going to be deoxyribose. And what's the third part? The nitrogenous base. And there's four possibilities within DNA for that, right? It can be adenine, guanine, cytosine, or thymine, A, T, C, or G. Well, I don't think I told you that at the time, but phosphate groups are negatively charged because two of those four oxygens are ions. So they have extra electrons, which makes them negatively charged. And since there's a phosphate group in every single nucleotide, that means that DNA is chock full of negative charges. Because DNA is nothing but nucleotides strung together. So that's why DNA is ideally suitable as a candidate type of molecule for being separated using gel electrophoresis. And not only do we know that DNA is going to be able to be separated by gel electrophoresis going into the experiment, but we know that it's negatively charged always, never positive. So we always know which direction it's going to move when we do the electrophoresis trial. We know that DNA will always move toward the positive electrode. Okay? Now, the gel itself, as you see here, is made from agarose. And even if you didn't keep reading and you looked just at the word agarose, what would that tell you that stuff is?
Sugar,
right, because it ends in OSE. Well, agarose is not only a sugar, it's a complex sugar. It's a big polymer of many simple sugars stuck together. So that kind of stuff, remember, is called polysaccharide. And agarose comes from seaweed. Seaweed makes agarose for its own benefit. But it is also the same sugar that is used to make the stuff in the plates that you plate out your bacteria on. That's why those things are called agar plates. Agar is a gel made of agarose, just like the gels that you make for electrophoresis. They're not identical. They have different ingredients. But a common ingredient to both kinds of gels is this agarose polysaccharide. Like I said, we're not going to be doing the actual electrophoresis today, but once we do, which is a little later on, one of the components of the gel, besides the polysaccharide, is stuff called TAE. TAE is an acronym, obviously, all caps. You don't have to know what it stands for. It stands for trishydroxymethyl aminomethane, I think. That's just the T. The A is acetic acid, and the E is EDTA, which itself is a long name. So don't bother memorizing that. Just call it TAE. But notice that it is a buffer. We talked just a little bit about buffers weeks ago. What is a buffer in general? It doesn't separate, no. Well, that's a good use of the word in, you know, in a non-chemical. You know, when we say that there's a buffer zone, for instance, that's a kind of a protection from something. In chemical terms, a buffer is a substance in a solution that will resist a change in the pH of that solution if you add either acid or base to it. So if you have an unbuffered solution, it doesn't have a buffer in it, and you add an acid to that solution, it's going to make the solution acidic. If you add a base, it's going to make that solution alkaline or basic. But if you add the same acid or base to a solution that's identical, except that it also has buffer in it, that buffer will counteract the effect of either the acid or the base and help maintain that pH. It'll change slightly, but not nearly as drastically as the pH would change if it didn't have the buffer.
So a buffer
resists changes in pH? Yes, a buffer is a substance that reduces a change in pH. It minimizes the change in pH. And therefore, TAE, being a buffer, is part of the ingredients of making up these gels, just so that the pH is maintained during the experiment at a level that's appropriate for electrophoresis to occur. You don't want that pH to change, or the electrophoresis itself might not work as well. Okay, but that's one of the uses as a buffer. TAE, though, also happens to be an electrolyte, so it's able to conduct electricity. And this is important because if you didn't have any electrical continuity between the two electrodes, one at either end of the gel, in other words, if electricity did not flow through the gel, then there would be no tendency for things to migrate through it. You have to have electrical continuity. It completes the circuit, in other words. All right. Now, a gel contains some number of wells. When you make a gel, wells are just little depressions, little holes in the well, not all the way through, but to some depth within the gel. And they simply are there to accept whatever samples you're trying to electrophorese. So your samples, when you do electrophoresis, are usually mixtures. Mixtures of particles of different sizes and maybe different charges. Well, if you're using DNA, they're not really different charges because they're all negatively charged. But your sample will typically have different size pieces of DNA in it. Okay, that's what will separate out. And so if it is DNA, it's always going to go to the positive side, which is why you would always set up a DNA electrophoresis gel the same way. When you make a gel, you know, it's really just like making Jell-O or a Knox block. You're mixing powder with liquid and letting it set up. But while it's setting up, you know, you make this in a little box, a little rectangular box, so it has the shape of a electrophoresis gel. While it's setting up, though, you put something into it that's called a comb, because it looks like it has little teeth just like a comb. And those, once the gel sets up and the comb is removed, those will make the wells. Well, you can make the wells in the middle, however many there are, or at the end, one end of an electrophoresis gel. Why would you make the wells in the middle?
If you're unsure of the charge of the substance, you're trying to electrophorese.
That's exactly right. If you don't know going into this whether the particles are positively or negatively charged, or if you do know that it's a mixture that contains both positive and negative charges, then you're going to want it in the middle because some of those particles are going to go toward this electrode, say it's negative. Some of them are going to go toward this electrode, which is positive. Right? If you started on the end and you know you had both charges, One of those is just going to go right off the edge of the gel by going the other direction. Okay. Well, you wouldn't do that for DNA, though, because if you know that what you have is a mixture in which every particle is DNA, then you're going to want to start, you're going to want to have the all the wells at one end. But importantly, you want to set that gel up so that the positive end is away from the end that has the wells, right? Because you know that DNA being negative is going to move toward the positive side. If you put that gel in backwards in the chamber, which would really amount to this being negative and this positive, then the DNA is just going to spill right off the edge of the gel, ruining the experiment. All right, dye is added for viewing the samples. DNA particles, as they migrate through this gel, will be invisible. You won't see anything, you won't see the DNA at all during the experiment, during the electrophoresis trial part of the experiment. Later on, you can see them based on what you do to the gel or how you prepare the samples to begin with. But during the time in which the electrophoresis trial is occurring, you want to make sure that you don't run this thing so long that DNA just goes off the other end, right? You want DNA to go toward the other end, but you don't want to continue the trial so long that it just goes right off the other edge. On the other hand, you don't want to just stop it so soon that the DNA doesn't travel very far. Because if you have, let's say, a mixture that has two different size DNA in it, they both start in the same well because it's a mixture, right? They're going to separate based on their size because, depending on their size, they'll go different speeds. Which means when you start that trial, they both start at the same start line, but they'll move toward the finish line at different speeds, so they'll separate more and more the longer you let this thing go, right? Does that make sense? Just like two cars going different speeds. The longer you let the race continue, the greater distance there is going to be between the two cars where when you say, okay, stop. That's what happens in electrophoresis. So if you stop it right after you start it, you might not be able to even tell there's any difference in how far they've gone. They won't separate very much. So you want to maximize the time you want to maximize the distance that the fastest moving particle is going to move through this. You want to get it close to the end so that there will be maximum separation between the particles. But you don't want it to have it go so long that fastest particle is going to move off the edge. And therefore, while you are actually conducting the experiment, it would be nice if you could see how far things are going. Well, you don't see the DNA, like I said. But if you when you fill your sample well with your DNA, if you include within that mixture a dye that you know is smaller than your smallest piece of DNA in there, then first of all, since it's a dye, you'll see it. It'll be a color, whatever color it is, usually blue on the ones we use. You'll see it, first of all. And since it's smallest, it will move the fastest. So that's just true in general for electrophoresis. If you have a charged particle, it's going to move because of its charge. And if you have several charged particles, they'll move at different speeds, with the smallest ones moving the fastest. And that's because they get through that thick gel more easily than bigger particles do. Okay, so it's kind of common sense that a small one would go the fastest, but it's easy to forget that. You tend to think large, you know, you put large things at the top of the list sometimes, and so don't be confused into thinking that the larger ones go farther. Larger ones are slower to move. So if this dye, these little dye molecules are smaller than the smallest thing that's in your sample, they'll move faster than anything else. And so if you have some of this dye in all of your wells, you'll see during the experiment a band of whatever color dye you have, and you'll know that all your DNA is actually behind that, closer to the start line. So if you run this thing until the dye front, as it's called, that line of dye, gets close to the end, then you know you've maximized your separation of your DNA, but you haven't gone so far that you've lost any of your DNA. Okay, does that make sense? All right, let's go to the... Oh, I forgot my remote. In the second slide, we have factors affecting mobility. Mobility refers to how well something moves through the electrophoresis gel. We've already talked about a couple of these. But first on this list is something that we didn't talk about. The concentration of the agarose in the gel is a factor. The polysaccharide, the agarose, is what makes it gel-like. It's what makes it set up. So if you use more and more powder, which is what the agarose comes as, if you make it more highly concentrated in agarose, it's going to be even thicker, right? Just like you can do by adding more Jell-O mix to the same amount of water. It's going to make it a thicker Jell-O. Same thing here. Well, thicker stuff is harder for everything to move through. So that's going to slow down everything. They'll still separate because they'll be different sizes, but the whole thing will take longer. And sometimes you want that to happen, sometimes you don't, so you adjust the concentration. Size of particles I've already discussed. Slower ones move through the gel more easily, and therefore, in the same amount of time, they will move farther. Next is conformation of particles. What does conformation mean? Just another word for what? The shape, exactly. Just another name for the shape. You can have two identical sized particles, but if they are different shapes, they will move at different speeds as well. Just like you can imagine if you're trying to walk through a swimming pool, which is kind of like a gel to us, if you're all spread out, you're going to move at a different speed than if you're compact, right? Because of the drag is different. So in certain electrophoresis experiments, you take careful steps to make sure that everything basically has the same shape, so that you take shape out of the equation. Charge of particles, of course, is absolutely necessary. If you don't have any charge, nothing's going to be moving toward either electrode. But the magnitude of the voltage is also a variable that you can adjust. So how many volts you apply across the length of the gel will determine how fast these things will move, because the bigger the voltage, the more force you're basically applying to push these things towards the opposite electrode. Now that doesn't mean you just dial it up to a million volts and get it over within a second, because that doesn't work. You want it to be a low enough voltage. Well, you want it to be a high enough voltage so that you don't have to wait forever. But you want it to be a low enough voltage so that everything works very smoothly and you don't destroy the gel itself. You know, you give it too much voltage, you're just going to fry the gel. And of course, time is also a factor, because if you run a gel twice as long, everything's going to move twice as far as it would given half that time. And this is the main reason, this is one reason why you can never compare one gel to another. All right, so if you measure the distance, these little marks, by the way, are called bands. So your DNA, once you actually are able to see it after the experiment, you'll see bands. And each lane will contain so many bands. A lane corresponds to a well, just like a swimming pool, right? So the wells are like the starting points, and the lane is where the swimmer has to stay in. Well, that's where these bands are going to be traveling in, lanes. If you measure the distance traveled, which would be the distance from the well to the band that it ends up at, you cannot say absolutely how big that thing is. In other words, you can't say it moved this far on this gel, another one moved so far on another gel, therefore this one's bigger than that one. You cannot compare two gels. Why? They might have different concentrations, and even though if you tried very carefully to make it exactly the same concentration gel, same mixture, and you just poured it half into each one, even then you couldn't compare two gels because all these other variables might change between two gels. Okay? On the other hand, if you're doing everything within one gel, then you can compare one lane to another because they were done under exactly the same conditions, exactly the same amount of time, exactly the same voltage, exactly the same gel, and so on. So these things are relative. You know, just for time alone, this distance does not mean a certain size every time. Because that same size, if you just let it run longer, it's going to go farther. Right? So that's why you can only compare within a gel. You can compare one lane to another. And often what's done, if you really care about what the size is of some unknown particle, then you'll include in a different well on that same gel a standard mixture that you know the size of the particles in. Okay? And so that mixture is going to form several different bands corresponding to several different sizes of particles in that solution. Some books will call this a molecular marker. And when you see the several bands that it produces after you actually do the electrophoresis, that banding pattern is called a ladder, because it looks like a ladder, the steps on a ladder. Well, this is useful because you can put sizes, numbers, to each of these little marks, since you know what the size is of that standard solution particles. And therefore, in your unknown one, you can match it up to one of these and say, well, it must be it's the same size because it moved the same distance in the same amount of time on the same gel. So you can use a ladder, kind of like a yardstick, or a meter stick, more appropriately. Yeah.
So let's say, for example, you're doing a paternity test. You have to do both samples of DNA on the same tray. You couldn't do them in two separate locations.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And we're going to be doing something very similar to that. We're going to be doing DNA fingerprinting, which is, we're doing it as a forensic test to see who might be guilty in a crime, for instance. DNA from the crime scene and then DNA from several suspects, and you're trying to match them up. Has to be on the same gel. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, slide 3 just shows you that what I've already told you, agar, which is the stuff on the left here, the stuff that is used to make the gels and the plates, comes from the same seaweed that we used for gel electrophoresis. These are plates you've used. It's gel-like. You'll see once we make electrophoresis gels that it's at a lower concentration, so the gel isn't as thick, but it's still pretty thick stuff. And slide 4 shows you pictures of gels. Now, you see the wells that I was drawing. Those are just little depressions that you put your samples in. This is what your gel will look like for the entire time that you're running the gel. You don't see any bands in it because that DNA is invisible. But because of the fact that in the experiment that we do, we treat the DNA with a dye that will fluoresce under ultraviolet light. Well, until you shine ultraviolet light on it, you're not going to see anything. But after the gel is done, if you put it in a UV illuminator, you'll see the bands pop out. They'll glow. And so I'm sure you've seen pictures like this on the news, because they like to put stock photos of scientific-looking stuff when they're talking about science. Well, this picture on the right gives you a good view of what I was drawing here. This is a ladder. So each one of these bands in this same lane correspond to a particle of different size. But since this is a standard solution, you already know what those sizes are. So you can put little numbers next to them saying how big they are. And if these are the unknown ones, whichever band they match up to is the size of those particles.
So why did they just blow up those particles to look bigger, or they just come up?
You're talking about the thickness of them?
Yeah.
That depends on how many are in there. And this is an important point. When you have a mixture of different size particles, it's not that you have one piece of DNA so big, one piece of DNA another size, and so on. You have millions of copies that are the same size. One piece of DNA would not show up as a band at all, even though it's there. Even though it's glowing, you wouldn't see it, because a piece of DNA is a molecule. So that you have actually millions of different copies of that same size here. And the more millions of copies you have, the wider the band will be, because things aren't absolutely perfect. They don't all move exactly the same distance. And therefore, if you actually have too much, your band will get more and more cloudy, basically.
But it's still, as long as it lines up, it's that size regardless of how wide it is.
As long as you're matching it up to a ladder that's on the same gel.
Okay.
Because they were run under exactly the same conditions. Yeah.
Does it move within the gel or
yeah.
on the surface?
No, within it. Because when you micropipette it into these wells go basically halfway through the thickness. So the stuff is going to move right through the middle of the thickness of the gel as it travels. And that's not on the surface. That's glowing from within it. Okay, and slide 5 just shows you a comparison to a DNA ladder. We've already just talked about this. These spacings between these what are the things within the lanes called? Bands. The spacing between these bands of a ladder do not have to be the same spacing. You know, they are, if you use a ruler, you have nice even spacing, but they don't have to be. As long as you know what the sizes are, they can be different spacing, as they are here. And here you have nice tight bands simply because these ones, probably what happened here is that the many, many copies that of this size were also very similar shaped. Whereas these ones, you might have had too many, or they might have had slightly different shape for the same size, and therefore some of them were slowed down slightly. You get a more blurry band in that case. And if you really want to do things carefully, we're going to be using gels that are about that long. If you really want to do something carefully and get as much separation between bands as you can, you use a damn long gel and run it for a very long time so that things separate more and more the longer you give them. That's if you really want to be careful about it. All right, that's it for that show. So let's take 5 minutes and then start the quantitation.